This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Hey, stay sharp.
Hopping into a brand new weekend. I'm Sean Steyer, along with Evan Sharpley. And you just heard that little congratulatory note to the Penn baseball team for winning yet another sectional championship. But, of course, we'll see Penn and Mishawaka tomorrow over at LaPorte for the regional semifinal game. And you'll hear it here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Going to be fun. Went out and talked to Mishawaka coach John Hummer a little bit yesterday, and they're excited. And Penn is like, we were kind of talking just a little bit about some of their guys, Evan, before we started up off the air. And I mean, this is that's a program that is it's got a long history, won a state championship just a few years ago, and Skylar Sinski, a guy who was a big part of that team, who had a scholarship offer to go to Indiana, mm-hmm. was drafted by the Oakland A's, and I think it was, what, fourth round, like that? Mm-hmm. And so fourth round, how much money are you going to get? And Oakland's thing has kind of always been they typically kind of bump up their signing bonus for guys, and they did, paid him $1 million. And I guess it turned out to be a good choice for him because, unfortunately, he's had elbow surgery here just really recently, Tommy John, so he's going to be out for a little bit. So kind of like you were saying, though, fortunately, I guess the only silver lining in those situations is he's young,
right?
And the bounce back after, especially when you are so young, is
the window. His window of opportunity still exists.
Yep.
You know, if you're a little bit older, you know, you've come out of college and you have one of those, the window is pretty short.
Yep.
So he's got some time still. So hopefully his rehab goes well and he can get back out there and start competing again.
And his brother Cameron Sinski, a third baseman on this year's Penn team and was honorable mention All-NIC. That was just announced earlier this week. Ryan Lynch, the Notre Dame commit. Don't know if we'll see him in the first game tomorrow. And that's kind of that's a strategy, too, when you're faced with a potential of two games in one day. How do you pitch
game? Do you throw your number one, or do you throw maybe your two and three and then plan on throwing your one for the second game? But if you lose game one, then you can't throw anybody.
That's exactly it. You got to win that first game.
I've always been under the premise, you got to throw. I mean, you throw your best to win.
That's right.
And, you know, I think it happened the year that Skylar was on the team when they won the state championship. They actually, Penn put a pretty good beating on the team the first game. So Skylar was able to come out of the pen then in game two and close it out.
Out early and then.
Yeah, because he didn't pitch the entire game. So, you know, you hope your offense then helps out your pitcher as well, where you can get a little bit of the lead and potentially then, you know, use him for the second game as well.
Yep. Penn was the state runner-up last year. They've been to semi-state. And again, one state won the state championship in 2015. And on the other hand, now you've got Mishawaka. They've kind of gained some steam here over the last few weeks. They've won 13 of their last 15 games. John Hummer squad winning a sectional for the second time in 3 years after being since 1998. It took them 18 years from 98 to 2016 before they won a sectional. On a little bit of a roll. This will be the third time Mishawaka and Penn have played this year as well. So it'll be, John Hummer, when I talked to him yesterday, wasn't definitive about who he was going to start. Basically, it's going to come down to either Sam Shively, the guy mm-hmm. who's also the quarterback and plays guard for the basketball team. It'll be either him or Grant Jablonski, most likely.
Right.
They're two top pitchers, and so his decision is about, well, they've already seen Shively. Do I want to go with Shively, even though statistically he's kind of been their top guy all year? Do you go with an arm
a new face,
that they haven't
yeah.
seen?
Yeah.
That's right.
We'll see.
In any case, they both had to pitch in sectionals and help get them here. And the big thing, I think, for Mishawaka that they're looking at is they were kind of helped out by some mistakes by the other teams that they played mm-hmm. last week at sectionals. Penn doesn't beat themselves, and I think John Hummer said that about 10 times in the 30 minutes.
Might need a little help.
That's right. Penn's not going to beat themselves, so you got to play a really good game. All right, NBA Finals last night, and I'll tell you what, we'll talk about that in the second segment, because everyone's heard about that already here this morning. So let's talk about some other stuff first, and then we'll do NBA Finals, because there was plenty to go on in that NBA
Finals game
last night. That's right. And Mr. and Mr. Cranky Pants, Mark Jackson.
Oh, jeez.
Jeff Van Gundy. Those guys kill me. But so we'll talk about some
other
things.
That's why I watched the ISO cam. I don't have to listen to any comments.
I didn't even know that was an option, and you were just telling me all about this ISO cam.
Click on the ISO cam on Watch ESPN, and you don't have to listen to anybody. You just get the live crowd. And the camera.
As an announcer, I don't know how to feel about that.
Well, I like it too, just for the flow of the game. I mean, it's moving differently. You know, you see spacing a little bit different than just from the side view.
I can imagine.
And if I play like NBA 2K, that's how I play with the ISO cam anyways. I don't play with the side view.
All right. You got a Fortnite inside?
I still have not downloaded or played that game, in large part because I know if I do, I probably will waste too much time.
Be addicted to it forever.
Yeah.
All right. It's become official. The ACC Big Ten Challenge has been announced, and Notre Dame is going to play Illinois in their ACC Big Ten Challenge game. What do you think about that?
Winnable,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like the matchup?
I think Darren probably likes the matchup, right?
that's true. These are the ACC Big Ten Challenge games since Notre Dame has been in the ACC. They've played in 2013, they played at Iowa. 2014, they played Michigan State. 2015, at Illinois. 2016, they played Iowa. 2017, at Michigan State. So, kind of a recurring theme. Mm-hmm. You've got Michigan State, Iowa, and Illinois as the three opponents. Now, what kind of makes it tough is because of the Crossroads Classic, Notre Dame has alternated between playing Indiana and Purdue. So that's kind of already been part of their schedule. And I don't know. That has to figure in there, because obviously if you're going to play one of them, you don't want to be playing them in the ACC Big Ten Challenge as well. Indiana gets to play up. They're playing Duke. They go go to Duke. So, you know, I don't know if it lights everybody's fire, but
probably not.
It's from what you said, the most important aspect, it's a winnable game.
Right.
Right? The ACC has won the conference versus conference event over the last 2 years, 11-3. They won it last year, and they've won it 12 of the 19 years the event has been held. Notre Dame with a 3-2 record. Not bad at all. The other games, Minnesota at Boston College. This will be on Monday, November 26th. Minnesota at Boston College, Nebraska at Clemson. See, I don't think Clemson's probably very excited about Nebraska coming in. What about Nebraska? Would you like to see Notre Dame in Nebraska on the hardwoods?
Not really.
Doesn't do much for you.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Indiana at Duke on Tuesday the 27th. Michigan State at Louisville. How good Louisville is kind of determine how good that matchup is. NC State at Wisconsin. Would you like to see Notre Dame, Wisconsin? That would be a bad matchup. Also no?
No.
Why not?
I'm not a big fan of their style of basketball.
Just that grind it out.
But they've got it done. It's just
very similar to Virginia.
Yeah, for this matchup, not a big fan for something like that.
The Notre Dame Illinois game is going to be on the 27th of November as well. Pitt at Iowa. Good luck anyone watching that. And then Virginia Tech at Penn State as well. We just saw Penn State last year, just a couple months ago, St. Patrick's Day in the NIT. So those are the November 27th games, and then it'll conclude on Wednesday the 28th. Purdue at Florida State. Interesting matchup.
I like that one.
Yeah. Georgia Tech at Northwestern. And that's another team. Northwestern's another team Notre Dame has seen, but not in this event, but they've played them the last couple years. Rutgers at Miami. North Carolina at Michigan. Now that's
good.
That's a good one. Would you like to see Notre Dame and Michigan?
Absolutely.
I think Yeah. That one makes a lot of sense. Seen Michigan State twice already, but right. Not Michigan.
Even Michigan State again, I would like. Mm-hmm. Michigan or Michigan State.
But I don't know how much this factors into it, but like last year, Michigan and Notre Dame were both out in Maui.
Right.
So I don't know if the ACC Big Ten Challenge would stay away from a matchup like that because there was the potential that Notre Dame would, if LSU hadn't beaten Michigan, Notre Dame would have played them. But in any case, you've got Syracuse at Ohio State. Not a bad one, I guess. And then Virginia at Maryland. So those are the ACC Big Ten matchups.
So looking like another ACC.
Few good ones. I mean, you're going to have some young guys for Indiana. Romeo Langford and Amezi Anderson heading to Duke right off the bat Tuesday, November 27th.
Be a fun way to kick off your career.
Yeah, that's right. Go to Cameron Indoor.
Let's get it started.
Absolutely. Go in there right away. So that's the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and it was kind of leaked yesterday. John Rothstein was breaking some of the matchups, and now it is official. Notre Dame and Illinois have met 41 times. The Illini lead the series 27-14. The Irish won in the two most recent games, 68-60 over Illinois in the second round of the NCAA tournament back in 2003 in Indianapolis, as well as in 2015 in the 2015 challenge game at the State Farm Center. So, and then this is going to be actually Illinois' first visit to Purcell Pavilion since 1955.
Wow.
Yeah, when it was, when they were still playing, that Notre Dame playing their home games in the Fieldhouse. So, so at least, you know, because fans always complain about no marquee matchups and things like that at home, and it's a Big Ten team. It's not Indiana, but at least somewhat marquee, getting Illinois, a Big Ten team at home.
Nice way to start the season.
Absolutely. All right. So, how about some football?
Okay.
We're sitting here June 1st, and we're, a couple weeks away from Notre Dame and the guys getting out there for their summer workouts and all that stuff. Obviously, none of us are going to be able to see that. It's not like spring practice and fall camp and all that kind of stuff. But Street and Smith, a lot of the national publications have been, they're putting out their preseason
time
editions
of the year
and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely right. So Street and Smith lists guard Alex Bars as a first-team All-American for the upcoming season. He is the only player, Bars is, that they have as an All-American on their list. So if you could pick one player from Notre Dame to be an All-American this year, would you pick Bars or would you go with somebody
else? Does it have to be an offensive player?
No, anybody.
Man.
Either side of the ball.
I mean, I think, you know, at this point in his career, it's a pretty safe pick. And with the success that Notre Dame's offensive linemen have had on All-American lists over the past decade.
Yeah. I think
that would be the guy that would come to mind. You know, a player like Sam Mustipher might pop up on that list too. And
if I were picking an alignment, I would go to Mustipher first.
If he has the year, I think that people are expecting, you know, inside the Goog and outside the Goog too, I think that he'd be a guy, you know, who could really anchor this offensive line. I don't think there's anybody else that really comes to mind offensively. And my reasons being, you know, at the quarterback position, I think you have All-American talent there. But as we've stated a few times, and I know we'll probably talk about this a little bit more, I think that you're going to see two guys play. And it's hard then to be an All-American if you're sharing time. And we had the same Heisman conversation where could Brandon Wimbush potentially be a Heisman candidate? Absolutely. But it's hard to do that if you're sharing time or, you know, even if it's a small portion where you're leaving the field. That's not a great look.
Very true.
So there's definitely some All-American talent, I think, across the board. But you have a lot of question marks at receiver. You have some guys that could be. You know, I think Chase Claypool is a guy who's an All-American talent. But, you know, you still have to put together that body of work throughout the entire year.
Still potential / upside.
Absolutely. Defensively, I think there's probably more names there. A guy like Julian Love, I think, is a player who, you know, following a really good year last year, if he puts an exclamation point on what he did and continue to carry that momentum, he's a guy that I could see as being an All-American. But my safe, you know, my safe pick right now would be on the offensive line because there's a lot of love for the Irish offensive line. And I think that that plays into it a little bit more. I mean, if you're looking at a guy or you're looking at an area and you've seen success time and time again from Notre Dame's offensive linemen, two top 10 draft picks last year, you know, since Kelly, like we brought this stat up before, since Kelly has been at Notre Dame, he's had a first round drafted NFL left tackle starting every game in, you know, his entire coaching career. You're going to look there, no doubt. And if there's a guy that shines, then I think that he's going to be on that list.
And that's what I think, because apparently some of the talent evaluators are already kind of eyeing Alex Bars, and that's kind of part of where Street and Smith's came up with this. They didn't just pull it out of thin air. And when you think about it, because there were so many NFL guys and scouting type guys who were looking at all that Notre Dame film last year when they were looking at Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, it also gives you, your eyes are going to stay on them for the most part, but at the same time, you can still see what some of those other guys are doing. So it sounds like Alex Bars,
he must
caught
turn
some people's
some heads
attention
right away. Yeah,
which is good. I went to the other side of the ball where you were talking about.
I think there's more potential there.
Yeah, Julian Love just had a great season: 20 pass breakups, 3 interceptions, a total of 23 passes defended with those two combined. Second in the nation to Josh Jackson, the cornerback from Iowa, who's now in Green Bay. So it's like, I look at that. Now, is he going to have those same opportunities because they're going to be throwing the other way, that kind of thing? But at the same time, I think I would start with him, maybe Jerry Tillery, because there's still,
we've been saying this for a while,
and
though,
we saw a jump with Jerry Tillery last year, and now it's about, are you going to do it again? You still have to show. Mm-hmm. He still has to show his own consistency.
And another guy too that I've seen pop up on some lists is Aloe Gilman. Granted, he didn't play last year, but I mean the stats he put up at Navy the prior year were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And to come into a very safety based scheme, active safeties, rotating safeties, you know, coming down and stopping the run, he's going to have a lot of opportunities to make plays. And, you know, I really liked him in camp last year. I thought he had a good camp. I know the staff wasn't 100% sure on what the NCAA was going to do as far as, you know, how much he was going to be able, or if he was going to be able to contribute.
Right.
So we saw bits and pieces, but certainly like his skill set, you know, very technically sound. And I think, again, you know, in this rotating safety 4-2-5 defense, that Clark Lee is going to take over. I really like his role and how, you know, not that it's about stats, but it kind of is as far as, you know, All America goes.
Right.
I think he's going to have an opportunity to rack up quite a few tackles.
Yep, you would think so. 12-18, 96.1 WSBT, the Sports Leader, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. So Street and Smith also says, you kind of referenced this a little bit, of the quarterback situation, it, quote, isn't a novelty this time. A rotation seems inevitable, end quote. A quarterback rotation between Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book. So do you think there's going to be, you kind of maybe tipped your hat a little bit, a Wimbush Book rotation this fall? Do you think we're going to see that?
If what we've seen from Brian Kelly over his 10-year coaching, not even just at Notre Dame, that seems like a very, very strong possibility.
Yeah. It'll be as drastic probably, though, years ago.
Yeah, it may not. I think, I'm very biased. I am not a fan of a quarterback rotation. I'm not a fan of a two system.
I don't blame you
at all. I mean, I'm not. I don't like it. I think you have to, as a coach, you really have to do a good job of managing expectations as well, and communicating with both of the quarterbacks, but also the entire team on here are the defined roles. There only can be one quarterback on the field at a time. Being
well, that's
the
thing. It's easier at every other position. Like, you can rotate defensive linemen. It doesn't matter. Most of the time it goes unnoticed.
And plus, you know, everyone's eyes are on the quarterback. You're in a leadership position just by the nature of the position that you play.
Right.
So if you have two leaders, sometimes it can get murky as, all right, who are we following? You know, who's our guy? And certainly, I would assume that that's a conversation that the offensive staff and probably, you know, the defensive staff, the entire team that's weighing on their minds a little bit as far as how do we approach this? How do we make sure that, again, the expectations are set and guys really know their roles? And if, you know, if you do have a guy who's a starter, if it's 1A or 1B or however it's going to be listed, that if 1B does come in, you know, you're not batting an eye as far as trusting that person and looking to them for leadership too. But then, you know, for the 1A guy, it's hard because now when you're then on the sideline, you know, guys are going to be looking at how you react too. And you have to make sure that you're not necessarily wearing the negative emotions on your sleeve and you're very supportive, which is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, by nature, the quarterback is selfish. I mean, you don't want the other guy to be on the field because you want to be that guy. So it's balancing that as best you can. And it's a difficult task. And I think at times a couple years ago, you saw the good and the ugly of it. You know, frustration on the sideline and wanting to be out there trying to help your team. And I get that too. And that's probably where a lot of it stems from when you're having a season as poor as that was in that 4-8 year. And you believe, you know, in your mind that you can go out there and make a difference. Maybe you don't, but you believe you can. It's frustrating. It's a frustrating experience for everybody.
Do you think the whole thing really just hinges, though, on Brandon Wimbush? Does he get the ball out
Yes.
when he's supposed to? Does he put
Absolutely.
The ball where he's supposed to? The whole thing hinges on that. If he's doing his thing, then
unless
it's
they decide they're going to switch to run on the option, which they're not. You got to be able to pass the ball about 60% and complete the ball 60% of the time. It's got to be around that clip.
Yeah. And again, we saw great things from him in the spring game. Great things, but there's still a difference between spring game live action and Michigan live action and USC and on down the line.
Got to do it in the games.
That's absolutely right. Let me ask you another quarterback question while we're at it, because I saw that this recently, Dallas quarterback Dak Prescott, after Dez Bryant was released, they've been having OTAs and some of their mini camp and stuff down there, like a lot of the NFL teams. But he had this to say after the Dez Bryant situation, one of the first opportunities he had to talk to the media after that. Quote, "I don't know if any team in the league necessarily needs a number one receiver. It's about getting the ball out, spreading the ball around, keeping the defense on its toes," end quote. So, as a quarterback, what do you think about that? Do you need a number one receiver?
I'd love to have Randy Moss on my team. You know, Odell Beckham, sure, you can come and play for us.
Yeah.
You know, I hear his point, but if you have a game-changing wide receiver, it completely alters what the defense does. So it's gonna open up opportunities to other guys. Now, I think what he's maybe speaking to a little bit is when you get those number one receivers, there is, and you could say this for Moss, and you could say this for Beckham, and you can obviously say it for Dez Bryant, mm-hmm. there's a specific personality that seems to accompany a lot of these receivers.
Right.
Now, you could flip the switch here a little bit too, and you could also talk about a guy like Larry Fitzgerald. That's not the case.
Right.
Jerry Rice, not the case. So you have both sides of the story. If it's the guy who's begging for the ball as, you have to throw me the ball at all costs, yes, that is a problem. If you get a guy that is a number one receiver within the actual scheme that is not begging for it but understands my role, here's my role. I may pull a defender away so that, you know, Johnny Butterfingers over here is wide open and he scores a touchdown,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think that I don't know if he purposefully meant to say it that way, but that's how I took it. Was nope. we don't need the distraction of a eccentric number one receiver. We need guys that are bought into the system of that. Now, we might have one guy who's head and shoulders above everybody else, mm-hmm. but as long as he's playing within the system and I can do my job without you coming to me and yelling at me after every possession, we're okay.
And that's the, part of that, too, is that you do have Dez, who it looks like his skills have deteriorated over the last couple of years. He had a pretty bad ankle injury a couple of years ago. He looks a step or so slower. But at the same time, there's a difference in a really young quarterback who's still trying to figure his way out. And I think that's a lot of pressure when you have a diva receiver right. who's yelling for the ball all the time. And
who I saw just got passed up by the Seahawks.
Yeah, huh? That's right. And still is looking for a job, by the way, right now. It's a lot different. But like even Romo could throw Bryant open a lot. Yeah. There didn't have to be much of a window. He could throw him open. And I don't think that a guy like Prescott is there. But, I mean, you go back to the system you were in at Notre Dame. It came from the Patriots system, obviously, mm-hmm. when Charlie Weiss was here. And you look at that system, really, with the exception of the two or three years that Randy Moss was in New England, they never had that go-to guy. And they still haven't. It's all about kind of what Prescott is talking about. Take advantage of the defense, find the open guy, take what they're giving you.
But how amazing was it when they had Moss?
No, I mean there were a lot more highlights downfield.
I mean, that was a record-breaking year. But to the point, yeah, I mean, you want an offense that is, you're not necessarily relying on one guy to have to do all of the work. And if you looked at the success of the Patriots, I mean, there could be a different receiver every playoff game going, yeah, or every week leading up to the Super Bowl. And then, what was it, two or three years ago, there's a virtually unknown receiver. It seemed like that was the case. Every year, like, who's going to be the guy that's currently sitting on the bench that's going to have 200 or 300 yards receiving and a couple touchdowns in the Super Bowl?
That's right.
And, you know, so the system is important. Having the right guys are important, too. But I think for... I think for a guy like Prescott, who he is, he's still growing, he's still learning, to not be very short-sighted or one-dimensional on who he needs to throw to, for him to have success and for the offense to have success in Dallas, it's going to be much more than just throwing to one person.
But just ask anyone who's played fantasy football, and there are millions of fantasy football players across the country. You don't draft New England Patriots
wide
receivers, except for maybe Julian Edelman.
It's too inconsistent.
He's going to go deep in the middle of the draft someplace. Yeah,
you might have one week. He might have all the fantasy points for you, and then two
zero.
Or 3 weeks in a row, have zero.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's what it is. All right.
Blame Tom Brady and Bill Belichick for that one.
We'll take a timeout, and then when we come back, we'll let Evan Sharpley tell you about the joys of watching that. What do you call it? That cam?
ISO cam.
The ISO cam.
Yeah, ISO cam.
During it, I guess they've got it during college football games.
Oh, man. College football games are great. Games too? I don't know. I haven't checked the NFL games, but college football, that's one of my favorite ways to watch those games.
NBA Finals game one last night. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, were presented by Sharpley Training. Go to Facebook, search Sharpley Training, or you can also visit SharpleyTraining.com, and we'll talk more about what's going on there in just a little bit. 1228, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, just about 1232 on this Friday. Glad to have you with us today. Leprechaun Lunch, of course, is presented by Sharpley Training. Also brought to you by Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, voted the best tire store 2 years in a row. By Lechleitner Door, when you need same-day service, Lechleitner Door delivers. Call 295-6311. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By the Trattoria at McCree's, this unique pasta bar offers made-from-scratch pastas from old-world Italian recipes. That is at Carmilla's at McCree's. By Curt Outdoor Living, make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Curt Outdoor Living. By Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Contact Nathan Pivovar in Mishawaka or Craig Langhofer in New Carlisle. All right, NBA Finals. game one last night, and one, I was amazed with the adjustment that Cleveland made with the switching that they were doing on defense. They were alluding to it in the Houston series when Golden State was playing Houston, that could Cleveland make that adjustment? And I remember him saying, well, and I think this was the Weber, Reggie Miller, well, that's not really Cleveland's game. I don't expect him to do that. But they came out right away and kind of kept Golden State in check at the offensive end of the floor as a result for the better part of the night. Golden State ended up winning 124 to 114 in overtime. LeBron James, 51 points on 19 of 32 shooting. Eighth player to score 50-plus points in an NBA Finals game, but the first player to lose a game.
Poor guy.
When scoring 50-plus. I mean, he couldn't have played any better. 48 minutes last night. And the two big plays, which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with a block charge?
Jeez. I didn't even know that there were charges in the NBA first. And then I didn't even know you could review a charge.
And that's what it turns out it really shouldn't have been reviewed, because LeBron was outside the restricted area. He was like a foot, almost 2 feet, I think, outside the restricted area. And that's when you can go back and look to see whether or not he's in. And I guess the official down on the baseline,
he delayed the call too. That was the other thing. There was a pause.
And he
was like,
to the other guy.
Boom.
Yeah, exactly. So they end up reversing it after Kevin Durant plows into him. And you don't have to have your feet set. You just have to be in a defensive position. But they changed it, and that swung a lot.
Yeah, it did.
Right there. And so it ended up being a charge instead. And then J.R. Smith.
J.R.
That whole thing.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Why didn't Ty Lue call a timeout?
I don't know.
That was another one.
He was saying. But the story changed all over the place. J.R. Smith grabs the rebound after the missed free throw at the end of regulation. He pulls it out. He's in the lane. He pulls it out.
He easily could have just gone right back up.
Yeah. Whether or not it would have gone is another story.
From 3 or 4 feet away, though, it's still a pretty good high percentage shot.
Kevin Durant, I mean, on that same play, it's like you're 7 feet tall. You might want to act like you're interested in rebounding.
Yeah.
Well, I guess. It is the NBA Finals, but that's another story. But afterwards, J.R. Smith says, yeah, I knew the game was tied, even though everyone in the world said they thought they had the lead.
There's video of him on the court saying, I thought we were winning.
Yeah, I thought we were winning.
With LeBron just holding his hands out. Like,
right.
And you see the memes all over Twitter now,
right,
that have just taken off. I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, to that, too, though, is if you're a head coach with time winding down, you get an offensive rebound, even if you start dribbling out at all, timeout, design a play.
Right. You got about probably, 2.5 seconds or so left, or 2 seconds at worst. But
oh, boy.
Didn't work out that way, and then Tristan Thompson gets ejected toward the end as well.
It was over by then. I mean, once Golden State got hot in overtime, I knew they had to win that game in regulation, the Cavs.
So let me ask you this. So now
it's over.
Game one goes. The series is over now.
It's over now.
So that was that's what I was going to ask you. So when you look at it, do you take any maybe hope of a real series? That was the best shot Cleveland had. They gave them their best shot.
It's a must win.
They lost.
It's a must win in game two. If you go back to Cleveland,
down 0-2,
But
they've been in that situation. I mean, they were in that situation again.
But
granted,
Kyrie
it's Boston.
Is not on the team.
That's true.
Kyrie is not on the team.
That's true. But Golden State looks completely disinterested until the third quarter rolls around. This is two series
in
a row.
They got too many good players on the team. I mean, come on. I mean, literally, they've got so many guys that can hurt you in so many different ways. I mean, you have one guy that could get hot and you might go up 12 points. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's like that. Two step back, three pointers from Steph in overtime, and momentum's completely different.
Klay Thompson from the corner is just like And it's every other team's nightmare, man. Klay Thompson in the corner.
I still am standing by this argument right here. On either team, I think I could average 9 points a game in the NBA Finals right now. Nine. I think I could average nine. That's three threes the entire game.
So
I'm gonna be camping
out shooting threes.
I would be a complete liability on defense. Complete liability.
Which is okay? Three quarters of the NBA.
Kind
of
like Kyle Korver is right now. He's a complete liability. But I think I could go and stand in the corner and make three threes a game on either team.
Yeah.
Specifically though, for Cleveland. Because of how many times LeBron scored 50 points and he made the extra pass, I think, too many times. Like, I don't know the dude. Who are you throwing to in the corner that missed two or three in a row? Force a shot. I don't care. Fade away. Do whatever you want, LeBron. You should shoot the ball 50 times. Score 75 of your team's 90 points. That'd be awesome.
I guarantee you this. You would not look any worse than JaVale McGee.
Come on.
For one, I mean, they pulled him out of mothballs, and then all of a sudden, he plays the end of the first half, and he's starting the second
half. It's crazy.
A bounce pass goes through his leg first, and then he defended himself when he took that pass right in front of the basket, and he's like looking around. It's like, no, you're JaVale McGee. There's nobody guarding you. Just go up with the basketball.
Yeah. I mean,
and he blows a dunk. You would not look any worse than JaVale McGee.
I hope not.
And you could have your sweatband and the whole thing.
No sweatband. We'll put some Air Force Ones on, you know, the mids with the strap on there.
Yeah. But that was the first overtime game since 2015. The first two games of the 2015 finals went to overtime. Golden State and Cleveland split them. And, of course, Golden State ended up winning in six. Do you see any way this gets to at least six games?
I don't know. I may be surprised because I really was surprised how game one went.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the tip, it had a very Cavalier-ish feel. Can LeBron do this every game? I think he can, but he's going to have a little bit of help in some key situations. And two, you know, watching their strategy on the defensive side, they cannot allow Durant to get hot. They cannot allow Steph to do what he wants. They cannot let Klay camp out. Where they were at their best was working the shot clock and then trying to get it in Draymond's hands, shooting
threes.
A contested three or...
And he made a couple of them.
He did late, but early on in the game, he did not. And I thought that those were big. And Durant missed a couple of shots too.
Well, that's a guy who didn't even play well last night, and they still won. And
well, that's the thing is they can afford to have one guy have an off night. If the Cavs have...
But he hasn't played well since probably, what, game four of the Rockets series? Something like that?
When's the next game?
And they're still winning series and games. And,
there's too many weapons.
Yeah. Here's what I'm watching this game, though, last night. And this is the fourth year that LeBron's been back in Cleveland, four mm-hmm. straight finals between these two teams. And I realize they made the trade for Korver a couple of years ago. But it's like, you've had 4 years. You can't find anyone who can do what you're taught. You can't find any shooters to pair up. Just stand down there in the corner, stand out there on the wing someplace. They've got all these bodies, but they
really
still don't
have
a shooter.
That really should be their offense. Let's do this, okay? Here's my suggestion. You just get four guys that can shoot threes, all right? All in the, you know, the 6'4" to 6'8" range.
Yeah.
And then ISO LeBron. If he shakes his defender, go ahead and do your thing, or pull up if you want, or if you're gonna kick out to a guy that's gonna shoot 40% from three. There's got to be that guy somewhere, right?
Pretty much
sitting right here. Here he is.
There you go.
Me and Tom Noy.
He's sitting over at Sharply Treading. That's right.
Me and Tom, we'll join the Cavs next year. That'll be what keeps LeBron over there in Cleveland. Say it right now.
Unbelievable. Put Steve Vastoria out
all right.
there. I mean, come on. Do you really need much more than that? He'll hit threes. VJ Beachum.
My
Somebody.
Man, JJ Redick.
Yeah. Somebody can hit some threes out there. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We've got some more coming up. This list has been trending on Twitter over the past couple days, so I want to get get yours, your top player of all time,
yeah,
in all the different sports. So I want to hear from Evan Sharpley. Darren and I did ours last night. We're in a little different age bracket than you, so I want to hear some of yours. I would imagine you're going to have a completely different list than either one of us had. So we'll get Evan Sharpley's top guys in all the different sports when we return. Coming up on 12:43 Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Can open up Snapchat and it'll tell me.
Not even a hesitation. No, that's okay.
Hold on. Nope.
This is a new old song by Guns N' Roses. The intro to Shadow of Your Love. Have you heard this whole thing?
This is a new old song.
Appetite for Destruction was their first album.
I'm very well versed with that.
Appetite for Destruction, yeah. Released in 1987.
Okay.
And so everyone knows what's on Appetite for Destruction. So apparently this, Shadow of Your Love, they just released it. It's like they went to the vault. They never released this song. They had recorded it at the same time that they recorded all this other stuff and a lot of stuff that ended up on the Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 albums. And this is a song that has stayed in the vault for 30-plus years, and they've just released it about 3-4 weeks ago.
Wow.
And it's...
I must have missed that.
Charting the rock charts. It's on the rock charts right now. Shadow of Your Love.
Good job, Axel.
That's right. Hey, they found a way.
After Chinese Democracy took like 14 years to make.
Even if it happened completely accidentally, they found a way.
I guess that's what he should have done. He should just went back in the vault and released all songs he never released instead of trying to make new ones.
They've got to have some other stuff back there. So when we went to break, what just happened? Twitter, don't mess with me. When we went to break, I saw this tweet by Freddie Mitchell. And right when I picked my... Here it is. Freddie Mitchell, the former Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver, mm-hmm. tweeted, "I got to respect King James, LeBron James, obviously, for standing up for his teammate. McNabb would never do that for me." What? Freddie Mitchell, first round pick out of UCLA... who, it's an understatement to say, never played like a first-round pick. He had in 4 years with the Philadelphia Eagles, Freddie Mitchell had 90 receptions and 1,263 yards. That's an all-pro season. He did that in 4 years with Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia. And he's probably best known for having the stupid mohawk and standing on the sidelines doing... kind of like Draymond Green type stuff.
I'm sure McNabb's numbers during that same time were all right.
Yeah. But so that was Freddie Mitchell tweeting that. Interesting that Freddie Mitchell would say that. And I think he's kind of referring to LeBron James after the game, the reporter from ESPN.
I didn't really think he defended him.
Yeah, he didn't defend him. He just said, wouldn't answer the questions.
Well, no, but then he goes,
and he walked
I don't
off.
Know. I don't know what his state of mind is. I mean, yeah.
The ESPN guy, I think it was Mark Schwartz, kept repeating the question, rewording the question, asking LeBron James, J.R. Smith's state of mind. So Freddie Mitchell, all right. And he also had Freddie in 4 NFL seasons, 5 touchdown catches. And those were his only seasons. He was never signed by anybody else. First round pick by the Eagles in 2001, 4 lackluster seasons then. See you later, Freddie.
So pretty irrelevant then, this.
Out of the NFL. Thanks, Freddie Mitchell. I have no idea what he's done since then. All right, coming up on 12:50, let's go through this list here.
All right.
Really quickly. Trending on Twitter the last couple of days. Your favorite player of all time from each sport. Evan Sharpley's list. Let's start with the NFL.
Okay, so I know you brought up two different eras. I have my childhood one when I was like, when I first got into sports. And then... I would say,
what it's morphed into?
Pre and post collecting sports cards.
Okay. You can do that. Do both.
Barry Sanders.
Ooh, I like that.
And Brett Favre.
That's interesting because you're from Marshall, Michigan.
Right.
And so so Barry Sanders makes sense.
The Lions were so bad though.
Yeah, they were.
And I kind of jumped on the Packers bandwagon there. In large part, I grew up a Michigan fan, and Desmond Howard was on the team when they won a couple Super Bowls as a return man. So that's kind of my reasoning. Not a great reason, but
that's all right.
And I just kind of always liked Favre. I don't know. I mean, you're in the backyard
as a quarterback,
slinging the ball around.
I mean, who was the best Lions quarterback when you were growing up? Scott Mitchell.
I was just gonna say, head coach was Wayne Fonts at the time.
That's right. Remember the Halloween?
Oh man, bad, just bad.
Okay, Major League Baseball.
All right, Ty Cobb, Tigers, and then Derek Jeter. He's from Kalamazoo. Jeter. I was a shortstop. And then kind of fair, I guess the same, the Yankees were pretty good at that time too. Yeah. So, but yeah, I went to a couple of, turn two foundation camps that Jeter put on. One was in Battle Creek.
Cool.
And he went to Kalamazoo Central and then grew up playing for the Kalamazoo Maroons. So,
all right.
Those are my two picks.
All right. NBA.
Michael Jordan. We had a little rivalry in our home. My dad was a Pistons fan, big Pistons fan. And I liked the Bulls just because he liked the Pistons. And it was, I mean, that was a great time, though, because there was a good rivalry. But my dad, he despised Jordan because he said there was one offseason, it was after the Pistons had won, where Michael called up Joe Dumars and, like, invited him to work out and do, like, his offseason training with him.
Yeah.
And then the next year, the Bulls destroyed the Pistons, and he said it was because
he got all the secrets.
It was because he said that he got in Dumars' head. I was like, come on, Dad, like chill out a little bit.
Growing up in my household, my dad, Redskins fan, me, Cowboys fan. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like that one. But then the big draft class there in the late 90s, Iverson was my guy. Mm. I really liked Iverson, but that, I mean, Vince, I had a little Vince Carter. I had a Vince Carter poster on my wall for a while and actually just watched a really interesting documentary on him and how he basically like hit the effect that he had on the city of Toronto, when the franchise had just started and where it is now. But what he did to kind of revive that city from where it was, especially it not being really a basketball city at the time.
Right.
And what it's like now.
All right. Evan Sharpley's favorite players of all time in each different sport. College football.
You're going to disappoint a lot of people, probably. Desmond Howard. Charles Woodson.
You can be forgiven.
It's all right.
Again, you grew up in Michigan. Did you grow up more a Michigan
fan? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were there. We'd probably watched or went to the Big House once a year to watch a game. But it was on every Saturday.
All right. College basketball.
The Fab Five.
I had a feeling that if you're going,
I was a big Jalen fan.
Yeah.
My brother and I would, you know, go through and kind of we'd be different, you know, Fab Five members, Jimmy King and Juwan Howard and Chris Webber and all those guys, Ray Jackson. So
we're gonna have to do this real quick. Better commentator, Jalen Rose or Chris Webber?
Jalen Rose.
Have to agree. All right. NHL.
Gordie Howe.
Okay.
And then I had like this weird, it was Pavel Bure, like Dominic Hasek kind of. When I played goal, I was Dominic. And then when I was out skating, I was the Russian Rocket.
All right. Boxing.
Mike Tyson.
Everybody.
Boom.
Like, if you grew up in your, you know.
Put those clips on of him knocking people out. I'll get fired up.
Mine is still Marvin Hagler. He's
all right.
The one. And that was kind of, he was done, I guess, probably around the time you were born.
Well, what's funny is I went back and I looked at some old boxers as far as how to teach hitting too.
Oh, really?
And how they control and use their back hip. And so he was one of those guys. His uppercut was awesome. I watched his uppercut quite a bit on how his backside would turn. He had some power.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. You got a favorite pro wrestler?
Sting.
Sting, the Stinger.
I can do the Scorpion Deathlock to this day.
I bet you can.
I can.
All right. What about tennis?
Tennis.
Do you have a tennis guy?
Pete Sampras.
Okay. I would have picked Agassi from that era.
Ooh, yeah. I liked Pete. He was, you know, kind of quiet and won a lot.
You're from the soccer era. Do you have a favorite soccer
player?
Messi? Okay.
Yeah. No, but not that, I mean, he's more, I guess he's more recent, but
Pele.
Yeah, that's Messi. Yeah, I like
Messi.
We
were all watching Pele back then. We watched the movie Victory from the 80s, if you've ever seen that. Need some more GNR.
Well, if have you watched the documentary? Well, no, it's not a documentary. Narcos.
Haven't seen that.
It's about Pablo.
Okay.
And soccer is very much involved in that as well. And there's a 30 for 30, too. The two Escobars.
I'll have to check it out. Oh,
those are both good.
I remember hearing about that, but I never saw it. Okay. 12:56. We'll take a timeout, then back to wrap up. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We are winding down, about 45 seconds to go. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Anything going on this weekend as far as Sharpley training, Evan?
Yeah, we've got a little Friday Night Lights event tonight for quarterbacks and receivers. And if you're a big skill, say tight end, linebacker, want to come and get some speed and agility work, you can find all that information on our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram account.
Where's that going to be? Where are you going to be doing that?
We're going to be here in the South Bend area.
Okay.
The location is secretive.
Ooh. One of those pop-up, little pop-up clinic.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
All right. Sounds good. Sports Beat coming up tonight. Darren, Eric, and I will be with you. Darren Pritchett back in town. Leprechaun Lunch. We will talk to you next week.